morning.
It's always good to be here. Good to see everybody.
This morning I'm going to try to summarize the book of Job in 20 minutes or so. And that's been my challenge. But as I looked at this book recently, we were reading through it again, and it just struck me that there's so many things that happened with Job that maybe we don't understand, because there's dialogue from five different people in there. And so you kind of have to read that, looking at who's talking at each time. And the thing that strikes me is in the first chapter there, where you have a man who has walked upright and blamelessly before God, and God recognizes Job just that way. He says in verses 6 and 7, when he's talking to Satan, he says, "Have you considered my servant Job, a man who is blameless and upright?" And so this is what started my thought process, and I thought, how many times do I really contemplate life, what it takes for me to remain steadfast? There's so many things that go on around us every single day. You watch the news and your mind starts thinking about global warming, the war in the Middle East, politics, so many things that distract us from the day's events. And then we look at the price of groceries. Will my budget make it to the end of the month? My health, how's it doing? We got COVID scares. We worry about the things that are going to cause us to lose work or to lose our life. And through all of these things, how many times do we actually turn to God and say, "God, I realize none of this really matters. None of this is important." Or do we become so overwhelmed and engrossed in these things that we forget that we serve the Creator? Well, you look at the life of Job, and here's a man, he lost his children, he lost his herds, he lost his health, he lost pretty much his wealth, he lost everything. God allowed Satan to strip all these things from him. And in his life, even his life companion, his wife, comes to him and she says, "Job, curse God and die." She wanted him to lose his integrity on top of everything else, to abandon the faith. What would happen to you if you lost your family, your possessions, your wealth, your health? Do you have the foundation to stand? If tomorrow another country invades us, and if you ever read the history of wars, the people in countries that are invaded, it's brutal. It's brutal. I don't think we can even think in the terms of what happens. There's no food, there's no health care, there's no rights. Your home is no longer your home. How would we stand? Would we look to God and say, "I can make it through all of these things because really none of this matters"? Because that's what the early Christians had to deal with. And Job lost everything. And even when his friends came, if you read in Job, you know what they're telling Job? "Job, these things happen to men who are not blameless and men who are not upright. This is what happens to sinners, Job." That's what they're telling him. So he doesn't even have friends. He doesn't have a wife that supports him. He has nothing around him. And Job is looking at all of these things. And so if you'll turn over to Job, the first chapter with me, and we'll just read a couple of verses and then we'll move forward on all this. It's confusing when I read this book to see how a man who was so upright could suffer such things. And yet God chose him specifically for this. In verse 1 of chapter 1, he says, "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless, upright, fearing God, and turning away from evil." And then it says in verse 6, "Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, 'From where do you come?' Then Satan answered the Lord and said, 'From roaming about on the earth and walking around on it.' And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? Now this is how God describes him. For there is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil. If you look at the Hebrew words for these things, blameless is the Hebrew word tam, and it means to be complete, to be upright. Well, in the New Testament, we use a similar word to be complete, and it's called perfect. So God has described Job as being a complete man. And he says he's also upright. And the word in Hebrew is yeshar, which means to be straight, smooth, without deviation. So God has said, I have a man who is complete, and he walks the course. He doesn't move to the left or to the right. He walks the line. That's how God described him. Now, is that how God would describe you and me? That's how he described his servant Job. We get a description on how he lived his life in verse 1. He says, he was upright, fearing God, and turning away from evil. You read down and it says that he sacrificed daily. He prayed constantly for his children. He was a man who looked at the homeless and the orphans and the widows, and he helped them. He was a man who didn't charge usury. He was a man who did those things that were right all the time. He practiced righteousness. He practiced it. It was the way he lived his life. He lived a life to be in harmony with God at all times. And his daily life was devoted to that. And so is it possible for me to serve God with complete devotion and still face difficult circumstances in my life which seem contrary to the things that a righteous person should face? And the answer to that is yes. As a matter of fact, that's what we should expect in our life, is to face those kinds of controversies. And if we're not facing those, maybe we're not upright like we think we are. Because Satan doesn't target necessarily those who are evil. He targets those who are serving God. That's who he wants to bring down. And that's exactly what we read in Job, is he wanted to break this man. And he did everything he could to do that. And even Job, when you look at him, he wonders why all this is happening to him. I would wonder. I think each one of us would say, I've done the things that I should do. I've feared God. I've walked with God. And yet, I'm suffering like nobody has suffered. Look in chapter 2 of this book. And it's tough to summarize these things, so I'm just going to pick out just a handful of scriptures. Otherwise, we'd be here till about 4 o'clock today. And in chapter 2, this is what he says. And there's other verses that he does this, where he talks about him trying to figure out why he's suffering, the circumstances he's suffering. But he says, I will say to God, do not condemn me. Let me know why thou dost contend with me. Is it right for thee indeed to oppress, to reject the labor of thy hands, and to look favorably on the schemes of the wicked? Hast thou eyes of flesh, or dost thou see as a man sees? Are thy days as the days of a mortal, or thy years as a man's years, that thou should seek for my guilt and search after my sin? Now that's how he's describing himself. How could all of these things happen to me? I haven't done all these things that are bad. He viewed himself as an upright and a righteous man. He viewed himself as being humble and serving God at every opportunity. He viewed himself as somebody who was looking for the right path in life, and he walked it as close to being straight as he possibly could. Look at chapter 31. He goes on in this chapter to talk about other things that he does. Beginning in verse 1, he says of chapter 31, I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? And what is the portion of God from above, or the heritage of the Almighty from on high? Is it not calamity to the unjust? You see what he says there? Is it not calamity to the unjust? He doesn't put himself in that category. He says, and disaster to those who work iniquity. Does he not see my ways and number all my steps? If I have walked in with falsehood and my foot has hastened after deceit, let him weigh me with accurate scales and let God know my integrity. If my step is turned from the way or my heart followed my eyes, or if any spot has stuck to my hands, let me sow another and another eat and let my crops be uprooted. He's a man who firmly believes I'm doing the things I ought to do. I'm living the way I ought to live, and I don't understand how this could happen to me. And when you read it, do you look at that and say, I don't understand how this could happen to Job? But do you see what's happening to Job in all of this self-evaluation? He's done what we do so many times. And it's unfortunate that it happens to any of us, but he's looked at his own life. He started affixing merit. I'm not worthy of these things. I've done what's right. This doesn't happen to good people. It certainly shouldn't happen to me. I've served God every day of my life. Men make the statement, why does God let bad things happen to good people? I bet every one of us has heard this somewhere along the way. Why does God let bad things happen to good people? Well, God allows us to be tempted. He allows us to go through trials. You know, in Ecclesiastes, the 7th chapter, the wise man in Ecclesiastes, he tells us, Chapter 7, verse 20. Look at what he says here. He says, indeed, there is not a righteous man on earth who continually does good and who never sins. So in all of our self-evaluation, maybe we could miss the fact that we all sin. Every man sins. Job, this man who was upright, complete, who walked in integrity, walked that straight line that he walked, Job made sins in his life too. He sins because there's not a man who does not sin. Paul tells us the same thing in Romans 3:23. He says, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. So here we have this man who's doing the right things and he's doing what he can to serve God as best he can, but he still makes mistakes along the way. And the thing that's interesting about Job is Job accepts what's happening to him. He questions it, he accepts it. And if you turn to Isaiah the 8th chapter, you look at what Israel did when bad things happened to Israel. In Isaiah, the 8th chapter and verse 20. Isaiah 8:21. He's talking about the people here, and it says, they will pass through the land hard-pressed and famished, and it will turn out that when they are hungry, they will be enraged and curse their king and their God as they face upward. And they will look to the earth and behold distress and darkness, the gloom of anguish, and they will be driven away into darkness. So there are people when they are pressed in life, instead of them looking at themselves and saying, well, certainly there's trials that I'm going to have to face in life, and that's the time to dig my heels in and to really hold on tight and to hold on to what God has promised. There's some, they immediately let go and they curse God. There's some who blame God, and they make statements like, I can't believe God lets bad things happen to good people. Well, we're all bad people at times, right? Because when we sin, that's not a good thing. But we repent and we move forward in the direction we should move. And that's what Job did as well. He made those corrections in his life because he was a complete person and he walked that straight line. That's what we should be. That's how God should describe each one of us, as we're complete and we're walking that straight line. And when bad things happen to us, we should be digging our heels in and holding tight to God. That's what Job did. That's the thing that's interesting about him, is he never cursed God for the things that happened. He didn't say to God, this is wrong, God, and if you can't correct it right away, I'm abandoning you. If you turn to Revelations, the 16th chapter, here's Jesus writing, and John has written this down, but this is what Jesus says that's going to happen during this time of where Christians and Israel are going to be judged. And when I say judged, I'm not talking about by God at this time, but the results will be from God. He's telling them this is what's going to happen. And he says in verse 15, he says, "Behold, I am coming like a thief. Blessed is the one who stays awake and keeps his garments, lest he walk about naked and I'm reading the wrong verse, sorry. Verse 10, chapter 16, verse 10. "And the fifth angel poured out his bowl upon the throne of the beast, and his kingdom became darkened, and they gnawed their tongues because of pain, and they blasphemed the God of heaven because of their pains and their sores, and they did not repent of their deeds." Now he's giving us an example of what also happens to people who say that they believe and say that they're upright and say that they're blameless, and when they're put to the test, they turn on God. Job didn't do that. You won't find in there where Job did that. You won't find where Job thought that. He feared God every day. And what we see with Job, even though he suffered this and even though he questioned why this was happening, we see a man who's faithful. His faith never failed. In the midst of this trial and in the midst of this turmoil, his faith was steadfast. There's the example. That's what we need to grasp when we read this book. Not the fact that his friends tell him, "Hey, Job, bad things happen to bad people." And Job turns around and says, no, I'm a good person. Good things don't happen to people like me. No, we look at the fact that Job, in spite of all this that's happened, Job says, "I believe in God. I'm going to hold tight to him." In chapter 13 of Job, Job makes a statement here. He says, "Thou dost put my feet in the stocks, and dost watch all my paths. Thou dost set a limit for the soles of my feet, while I am decaying like a rotten thing, like a garment that is moth-y." So this is his self-evaluation as he cries to God. "You've put my feet in stocks. I can't move. You've set limits for me. I can't do anything." So Job has another man who comes up, and I can't really tell you exactly who this man is. He's not listed as one of Job's friends. It's Elihu. So you have his three friends who show up, and his three friends sit with him for several days before they even say a word. And when they start giving him counsel, it's not counsel that God would have him give. It's counsel that men would give. And this man, Elihu, somewhere he shows up and he's listened to all this counsel as well. And Elihu, after he's listened to all the things they've said and listened to all the things that Job has responded, he finally talks to Job himself. And he has a few things to say, and I think it's in chapter 31, because I saw this in my outline and then I didn't correct it, but I think it's in chapter 31 because I didn't write it down. It's somewhere in there. I'll find it real quickly. It's in chapter 33. So now this man, Elihu, talks. And like I said, when you get to the last bit of chapter of Job, chapter 42, God, he tells Job's three friends to go to Job and have Job pray for him. Elihu's not included in those three friends. He gives completely different counsel than those other three. He gives counsel like the counsel that God would give to a man. So what his role is, I'm not real sure. Who he is, I'm not real sure. When I read about it, I'm not real sure. But what he says in chapter 33, beginning in verse 13, he says, "Why do you complain against him that he does not give an account of all his doings? Indeed, God speaks once or twice, yet no one notices it." In a dream, a vision of the night, when sound sleep falls on men while they slumber in their beds, then he opens the ears of men and seals their instruction, that he may turn man aside from his conduct and keep man from his pride. He keeps back his soul from the pit and his life from passing over into Sheol. So Elihu tells him, God's much greater, Job, than men, and God is able to do this. If you read back a little before, he's responding to what Job said in chapter 13 about God putting his feet in the stocks. He quotes him there. He says, in verse 11, he says, he puts my feet in the stocks. He watches all my paths. Behold, let me tell you, you are not right in this, for God is greater than man. He's telling Job, he says, Job, you're not viewing God in the right sort of light here. You're questioning why these things are happening to you, and you're ascribing your righteousness as being immune from this type of trial. And it doesn't happen that way. Who are you to ask God why he's put you to the test? So you and me, do we ever ask God that? Why are you putting me to the test? Why do I suffer? How come only good things don't happen to me? You ever had that thought? It's not how I view my goodness and rightness. It's me coming to the understanding that my righteousness will always come up short without God's mercy. No matter how good I think I am, I'm never going to meet the mark without mercy being applied. And that's what he's telling Job. Job, even you, in all your goodness and in all your rightness, you need mercy. He's telling him, Job, you need God at all times. And Job, in fact, recognizes that. He never loses sight of that, but he's kind of got a little blurry vision as a result of everything that's happening here. Okay. His whole life, he prepared himself to be faced with, or to face trials like this. We should do the same. Every day of our life, we should be preparing ourselves to face whatever trial it is. We don't know what it's going to be. It might be minor and we might fail. It might be a big thing and we might overcome. But we can't get through it without God's mercy and God's grace. No matter how good we think we are, we're always dependent on His mercy and grace to help us. Job's faith began before this day and even in the midst of this. It continued. And I know this because of what he wrote in chapter 19. And to me, this is one of the most astounding statements that he makes in this whole book. He's looking well beyond what he's facing this day. And even though he doesn't like it, and even though he doesn't understand it, he says something beginning in verse 23. He says, "Oh, that my words were written. Oh, that they were inscribed in a book, that with an iron stylus and lead they were engraved in the rock forever." Now look what he says right here in verse 25. "As for me, I know that my Redeemer lives, and at the last he will take his stand on the earth. Even after my skin is destroyed, yet from my flesh I shall see God." Man, now that's deep right there. He understands there's a hereafter. He understands there's a spirit. He understands that this fleshly life that he lives really doesn't matter. And he understands that it's God who will save him. Well, I think if I'm going to view this the right sort of way, then I need to think that exact same thing every day, because I'm not going to get through trials in life unless I remember that, "As for me, I know that my Redeemer lives, and at his last he will take his stand on the earth. Even after my skin is destroyed, yet from my flesh I shall see God." I can't get through it unless I remember that. Unless I remember what Job saw well before the days of the Messiah. This book, I think, tells you and me of trials that are incomprehensible to us on the level that we've experienced day to day here. And most likely, I hope and I pray that none of us will face these type of trials in our lives. But none of us are insulated from trials. And I think we should always remember that. None of us are insulated from trials. In fact, we know that we're going to face trials. And in 1 Peter, the 5th chapter, Peter says here in verse 8 of 1 Peter 5, he says, "Be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls about like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour." I think the King James uses the word watch there for be on the alert, watch. And that word, the Greek word there is Gregorio, stay awake, be vigilant, watchful. Every time you see that word watch in the New Testament, it has to do with us being careful about the walk of our life. Every time it's used, it's be careful how you walk. So we should watch. And Jesus told his disciples that at the same time. In Mark, the 14th chapter, Jesus says here, and this is the night that he's betrayed, but he says in chapter Mark 14, verse 37, he says, "And he came and found them sleeping and said to Peter, 'Simon, are you asleep? Could you not keep watch for 1 hour? Keep watching and praying that you may not come into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak.'" So Jesus has told us to watch. Be careful. You don't know when this temptation, this trial is going to come against you. You need to be prepared at all times. Don't let your guard down. Job, don't let your guard down, and I don't know that he necessarily did, but he did view his righteousness wrongly. He was overbold in the way that he viewed himself, and you can see that in Job, the 42nd chapter, and this is after God has spoken to him. How, I don't know. It sounds like directly when I read the scriptures here. But in verse 42, or chapter 42, beginning in verse 1, it says, "Then Job answered the Lord and said, 'I know that thou canst do all things, and that no purpose of thine can be thwarted.'" And then he quotes God there. He says, "Who is this that hides counsel without knowledge?" And Job answered, "Therefore I have declared that which I did not understand, things too wonderful for me which I did not know." He quotes God again. He says, "Hear now, and I will speak. I will ask thee, and do thou instruct me." And Job now responds, and he says, "I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees thee." So what he's saying is, all those things that I thought I knew, I didn't really understand, but God, I understand them now. And then he says in verse 6, "Therefore I retract, and I repent in dust and ashes." What he said is, "God, I didn't view you the right sort of way. And I viewed myself too high. And I didn't understand that these things can happen to all men, even men who view themselves as being righteous. Bad things can happen. But I will always conquer, and I will always persevere as long as I'm faithful." That's what he's saying. That's what you and I need to say every day. Every time we face a struggle in our life, "I can overcome if I'll persevere and remain faithful." Back to Revelation, the 16th chapter. I jumped ahead of myself a while ago, but you see the two sides of the coin in Revelation 16. So in chapter 16, at verse 15 now, Jesus said here, "Behold, I am coming like a thief. Blessed is the one who stays awake and keeps his garments, lest he walk about naked and men see his shame." So he's saying all the time, be vigilant. Stay awake. Recognize that trials are going to face you in life. If you will hold fast, if your integrity always remains with God, if you always understand that it's His mercy, no matter how good we are, no matter how well we've done, we're always dependent upon God, that's when we can overcome. That's what Job was trying to tell us by the end of that book. That's what we learn in that book, is that good people can face really tough times in their life. But God doesn't abandon us. Even when He tries us, He doesn't abandon us. In 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, Paul said here, and I'll leave you with this verse. In 1 Corinthians 10, Paul talking to the brethren in Corinth, verse 13, he says, "No temptation has overtaken you but such as is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with that temptation will provide the way of escape also, that you may be able to endure it." So when we struggle in life, if we'll continue to remember that God is there with us, that even though it feels like something that is insurmountable, He's not going to put us to a test that we can't overcome. We just have to make the choice to not follow our own will and to stand with God, regardless of what those consequences would be. The lesson's yours. I just ask each of us, as I ask myself, to be careful with our walk. Are we taking the way of escape God provides in time of trial, or are we walking the way that we desire ourselves? Consider these things as we stand and sing number 331.